the whining anymore. So the whining stopped, thankfully.
Yeah, okay, so nothing's going to blow up. However, okay, Thursday night game last night. A lot of stuff going on, right?
A lot of stuff.
More entertaining than anyone would have given it credit for.
I wasn't expecting that.
However, there was an awful shot toward the end of the game, and my heart broke for one Bradley McDougald.
Oh, I know.
Seeing him on the bench and just that face.
I thought the exact same thing.
Dude, it hurt a lot. Like, I was like, I'm sorry we did this. I know.
And it wasn't even just him. Like, it was the entire Jets team where I'm like, I actually kind of feel bad for him.
Awful. Well, just him in particular, just because, he was
he was a winner.
He was a winner.
He was
so accustomed to being relevant.
More of a loser than anybody could have imagined.
He's like, this
and he was a good team guy.
This is D3 football's not even finest.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally, he's being coached by Adam Gase now instead of Pete Carroll.
Yeah, we gotta talk about that. Yeah,
which is terrible because Gase he was brought in literally to be like the savior for Sam Darnold. And
well, he did really well in Miami, so it's crazy that things have gone the way that they have.
McDougald is too nice of a guy to be on a team like that.
Yeah, no, my heart breaks for that man.
He did not deserve that whatsoever. Hello and welcome back to the Locker Room. I'm your host Justin Reed alongside Andrew Tenney, and we still are consistently Spokane's only sports talk show, so that's pretty awesome. We're still not knocked off of our perch. I'm surprised by that because it probably wouldn't take too much, but here we are,
still killing it. I only hear it from you, but it's also the only time I hear it, so it's got
to
be true.
It has to be true. I only spit facts.
Spit hot fire and spit hot facts.
Takes are hot, and they're also right.
Right.
Always.
Always. So what's going on?
Nothing much. You know, we're here on a Friday again, mainly because of the fact that we're doing this awesome, like, meet the candidate stuff here. And so I know Vinny's been super busy. You've been really busy trying to get all this organized. But we're here, and we're going to talk some sports leading up into a busy weekend of not the Stanley Cup, which we forgot about because everyone forgets about NHL. It's not for the fact of – actually, it is. Its marketing team is terrible for the NHL. Luckily, here at Spokane Talks, we are graced to have an awesome marketing professionals who help us with everything that we do.
Yeah, no kidding. Honestly, and if you guys are fans of the show or have watched us before, you know how much we love Lucky Bird, and – we should know how much you love them too. So Lucky Bird wants you guys to know that they're a Spokane-based e-commerce and digital marketing company dedicated to helping local companies such as Spokane Talks scale in the online world of e-commerce and digital marketing. So what we want you to do, we want you to visit LuckyBirdBrands.com so that you guys can have a down-to-earth, no-pressure conversation about those digital marketing and e-commerce strategies. Do it today. Lucky Bird, the best.
Do it today. If you want to fly like an eagle, like maybe to the sea or something, use Lucky Bird.
I look forward to nothing more in the week than to hear how you're going to ad-lib off of Lucky Bird.
And
it's the best part of my week.
It's almost always just a ride on the fly, but it's all true, and it's on the fly. See how I did that?
I got it the first time. Thank you.
I just wanted to make sure, you know.
Oh, I got you.
It's been 8 days since we last did the show, so I wanted to make sure.
I know, it's been a long time. How you doing?
Not bad. You know, not bad. Seahawks won. They're now 3-0 for the first time since they won the Super Bowl, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah.
Speaking of teams that don't win anything, the Mariners ended their season here a few days ago, and that's all right because I'm pumped. I'm excited for the Seattle Mariners baseball franchise, which I haven't been able to say for a while, but they had a good year. I think the goals that they wanted, especially in a 60-game shortened season, they achieved. They stayed healthy. The young guys got a lot of play. Pretty much everything you can hope for in terms of a successful season for a team that's rebuilding for the 20th straight year. You're looking at some of their young guys. They wanted them to grow, to get more experience. They're going to continue to get more reinforcements here over the next couple of years with guys coming in off of the draft who should be top talent. You know, we've seen this before. Essentially, we don't want more Ackleys or Mike Zaninos. We need to make sure that this development actually happens because it is the most disheartening thing. You know, we talked about Bradley McDougal at the very beginning. It is the most disheartening thing when you look at a player and their soul is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened with both Dustin Ackley and Mike Zeno, among dozens of other players that the Mariners have brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really disheartening to see. But I think this organization with this leadership, people talked about Scott Service being on the hot seat before the season, which I thought was weird because he and DePoto are literally in this together. Like, this is going to either rise with them or fall with them. But let's look at some of their players this year. Did you enjoy the season? Did you have a good time with it?
Here is what I wrote down. You know me, okay. big baseball writer. So, Mariners were the Mariners, except they showed tangible evidence of reason for fans to have optimism going forward. How do you like that?
That's pretty good.
In a nutshell,
that's almost spot on. And that's, I mean, at the most base foundational level, that's probably right. If we look at some of the guys who played really well, I think if you're looking at the most valuable player and the most valuable pitcher, just to kind of separate it out, Kyle Lewis was a stud. Mm-hmm. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. Strikeout rate came down from 38 to 27%. His walk rate went up from 4 to 14%. 11 home runs, solid defense, Rookie of the Year, should be Rookie of the Year. Now the Mariners have too many outfielders. They get Mitch Haniger back. They're going to get Jared Kelenic back.
Whoa, Mitch Haniger's on their team?
He's still on the team.
What?
Yeah.
Has he been injured all year?
Yeah, yeah, after his busted testicle last year.
That's right.
Yeah, he literally took a hard baseball right to the ball sack. That was bad. Just talking about that actually makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah, let's not. I'm good.
Like, I mean, you played baseball when you were younger, and did you ever take a shot there? Like,
no.
So I remember one time I always played third base or first base, so I always took shots. One time it hit, and I thought for a split second, I was like, my life is over. But I was like, oh, thank God we wear these things to actually protect us. Because there's a lot of – I was reading an article to kind of get off on a little bit of a tangent. There's a lot of MLB players who don't wear cups.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, a majority of MLB players don't wear cups.
That's wildly irresponsible.
Adrian Beltre didn't wear a cup.
Yeah.
He got hit. He also had a ruptured testicle in his time with the Mariners, and that was because he didn't wear a cup. He took a shot there. And that's why. It's really surprising because when you think of, like, youth baseball, you have to wear one.
Right.
Like, you go to the store and you're like you're there with your dad or, God forbid, your mom looking for a cup and you're just like, this goes where?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So, to get off of that.
Cup talk.
The MVP pitcher. The MVP pitcher was Marco Gonzalez. Yeah. Go Zags. He had arguably one of the best actual seasons of a Mariners pitcher in history in a 60-game season. He went 7-2 with a 3.10 ERA. Most of those earned runs came early on in the season. He essentially eliminated the walks from his game. He only had 7 walks and 12 starts, and 64% of his pitches were first pitches were strikes, which is pretty much your goal as a starting pitcher. I think he's going to be the perfect ace moving forward. Now, he's not fun like a Felix. Felix Hernandez, when he pitched, it was like, we get to see this guy every 5 days. Marco's like, we get to see this guy every 5 days. But he always puts together a consistent performance. So that's exciting. Also, Kyle Seager played in all 60 games back to his Iron Man status. He was one of only 13 players to play in all 60 games. I think, again, like I said, moving forward, the goal has to be to stay healthy and to make sure that your young guys who you brought in, who are supposed to fit your philosophy, your model, you need to live up to their expectations, because that's been the issue. The Mariners have had, unfortunately, consistently have had top 10 draft picks who have just been total busts. And it's been – the last good one really is Kyle Lewis from 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And hopefully from 2015 to now that changes. But, I mean, it's literally been just consistent in bad players, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. Their season is done. But that's all right. I'm glad they didn't make the playoffs. I didn't want their first time to make the playoffs to be with an asterisk. But we do have playoff baseball. And while I feel bad, I can't get into playoff baseball. And I don't know if that's because it's baseball or what. But I think what the problem is, they don't have a big, young superstar who's exciting to watch. Hmm. You know, you look at the NFL, you have guys who are, like, they have a brand, and they hit hard, they run fast, they jump high, they throw for 5,000 yards. In baseball, you don't have a guy that, like, is the face of MLB. Basketball's still LeBron. And I think football is quarterbacks, and quarterbacks are fun.
Well, it's funny, too, because in the MLB, the only guy that would be the face of the MLB has no interest in being that face. So shout out to Mike Trout for being a real one.
And I think some of that problem is because of the fact that baseball has never had faces. I mean, even Babe Ruth, when he was the face, like he was just like a dad almost. Like every single highlight I see of Babe Ruth, he's like sitting back smoking a cigar and he's fat. And it's like, you can't have that nowadays. I mean, everyone's on this like strict nutrition plan, and so I think that's part of the problem. Is there's no team that I'm like, they're just exciting. And the Padres have a little bit of that with Tatis, and we talked about him a few
Slam
weeks ago.
Slam Diego, baby.
Like that's about it. And the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw, but again, pitching isn't fun anymore, unfortunately. Make pitching fun again, I think, it needs to be the slogan of baseball, because that's really where this game's going in the terms of, like, you need to be able to have high-end pitchers and high-end hitters who can just battle it out, and you don't have that. So I'm struggling watching games. I love what San Diego is doing. I think it is fun. They kind of have some young, fun players. Who, if we're going to make picks here, because we probably should at least make picks, unlike with the NHL, who would you pick to win the World Series, and who would you be your runner-up?
For whatever reason, I have like a small affection for the Tampa Bay Rays. I don't know why. I also think it's interesting. This seems to be happening more and more. Again, big baseball guy, but I think it's so interesting seeing a pitcher wear a single digit number.
Yeah.
Like Blake Snell.
That is
he's
weird.
Number four, right?
Yeah. And he's a local kid. He's from Washington.
Yeah.
So that's
no,
cool.
I know. But it's just weird.
It is very
there's
weird.
Like too much space on the back of the jersey. It's a bizarre thing. But I am pulling for the Rays also because Tampa Bay, we're going to get to it here in a second, mentioning of the Stanley Cup and the results that came from that. But Tampa Bay is in the running for a triple crown of professional sports championships.
That is really cool.
Across the professional landscape. So there you go.
Yeah, if the Rays can do it with the Lightning already having one and then you assume the Buccaneers have a chance at it. I don't think so. But they do have a chance at it. I mean, once you start with one, you got to keep moving on. Well, Cleveland
did
that, right?
I don't know.
The
Saints look really good.
Didn't Cleveland have two? Didn't they? No, they almost had a chance because LeBron won it, and then so did.
Then the Cubs came back from a 3-1 deficit.
And then they needed the Indians. Or not the Indians. They needed the Browns weren't going to do it. That was
no,
the problem.
They weren't.
But that was cool for Cleveland because Cleveland is a bad town, I think. From everything I've seen, it doesn't look like a very fun place to be.
Okay.
That aside, just a nice shot at Cleveland there for you. I'm going to pick the Dodgers over the Rays in six games. The Rays are fun. I do, you know, the local kid, Ian Snell, is really fun to root for. He is a fun guy, too. He does have a little bit of passion when he throws. I think the Dodgers and their combination with Kershaw and Mookie Betts as their big stars, and I think that combination, along with the fact that the Dodgers have been there, they've done that, I think, and I'm hoping for the Rays. The Rays have a lot of injuries. Their pitching staff is still super strong, but the Rays have been the second-best team, arguably the best team in baseball this season.
Okay, so would it actually be more, now that I'm thinking about it, would it be more satisfactory for haters of the Astros in all different varieties for them to get bounced prematurely in the playoffs or for them to match up in the World Series
with the Dodgers
and have the Dodgers potentially blow them out?
Nice four games. Mm-hmm. That's a good question because the Astros already did sweep their first round opponent. I don't even remember who they played, but they already won their two game series or their three game. They won in two.
Those Twins who have lost 18 consecutive playoff games.
Yeah, that's not good.
Your Minnesota Twins.
That is not what you're looking for.
Ladies
so
and gents.
I think at this point, I would love to see the Rays do it, but that's a good point. I wouldn't mind seeing the Astros go to LA and just get swept. And actually, they're not going to LA. Where are they going? They're in a bubble.
I don't know.
I don't remember where they're going. They're in a bubble, which I think is stupid, but because they've done this all season playing at other teams.
Yeah, we already had that conversation. I was right, of course.
Yeah, of course, obviously. So that's the big thing for me. Watch baseball. I like they need it. They really need it. I'm trying to go out like on a little bit of a limb here for them because like I feel like they really need some help, right?
To say the least. Yeah,
I think so. So. If you want excitement, go watch Fernando Tatis and the San Diego Padres. If you want probably the best team in baseball from top to bottom, watch the Dodgers. If you want to watch a team and watch them get made fun of, watch the Astros and check the social media during all of it. And listen closely for trash cans. That's another thing we need your help with is to make sure they're not cheating again.
That's right.
Those dirty little cheaters. Speaking of teams that don't cheat, the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup 4-2. Their second time in the Stanley Cup Finals and I think the last 4 years. I think it was 2016 that they were last there. And so Tyler Johnson becomes the first Spokane native to win a Stanley Cup title, which is good news for him. Really cool for him because he's an undersized guy who came into the NHL and no one really thought he had a chance, but he stuck around. I think he plays higher up in the lines than not, so I think that's impressive. Also gave the Yamamoto brothers an opportunity to be good as well, specifically Kyler Yamamoto, who was a stud for the Chiefs, now plays for the Oilers. They got knocked out in the qualifying round. But really cool to see two Spokane area kids who are both undersized, both, you know, didn't while they're playing for the Chiefs, they never were like, oh, yeah, they're going to be the Stanley Cup winner. Really cool to see that happen. I missed it. Now, when I said baseball needs help, they do a really good job with their marketing. I see baseball ads all over the place, and maybe that's because I watch ESPN more, and maybe NBC had a bunch of ads, but I didn't see many ads about the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, and this is a conversation that dated back to, like, June and July when we were doing the show, when all these different leagues were coming back – From the stoppage of play, and we were like, what's the deal with the NHL? It seemed like they were almost making like a concerted effort to like keep things under wraps.
Which was really weird.
Very little information about the logistics and the plan that they were implementing going forward. And now that kind of was the exact same case for the Stanley Cup final. I had to look it up. I didn't even know that it was over.
I didn't. The reason why I knew it was over is I think I saw a local news station or newspaper or a tweet. I think I saw a tweet. I think it was a tweet, and then I went to Facebook. But, yeah, I had no idea. I didn't really even know they were in Game 6. I would have guessed, like, if I would have seen a tweet about the Stanley Cup playoffs, I'd be like, oh, they're in Game 2 or whatever.
Exactly.
And it was done. And so that's unfortunate because I actually do like playoff hockey. I think it's a good time. The announcer of, I don't know what his name is, I should know, but the NBC Sports announcer does hockey, is probably a top 5 broadcaster in the country. I can barely watch the puck myself, and this guy commentates on it. And, like, he knows exactly where it's at, who has it, where it's going. And he has an awesome voice. So that's unfortunate because I do like listening to him. But that's a Stanley Cup for you. Unfortunately, we didn't get as much watch time as we probably would have liked. But that's their fault, not ours. That's going to be my excuse, at least.
Damn straight.
So we got some NBA playoff information going on here. Our poor guy here, Andrew, his Celtics got knocked out. We've been saying that, though, for a while in this series, so it wasn't unexpected. But we're moving on to the NBA Finals. They had their first game already. Not good at all for the Heat. But we're going to do a little bit of a preview here for you because there is some interesting storylines. But what are your thoughts on it?
Well, okay, so obviously we're shooting the show after Game 1 has already been played.
It's Game 2 tonight, right?
So, yes,
yeah,
okay. Game 2 is tonight. So much happened in Game 1, and so much of it was not good, not only for Miami, but the series as a whole and the intrigue that was there and all the storylines with LeBron having left Miami on bad terms and Pat Riley being spiteful and Heat culture and Spoelstra matching up against LeBron and all of these different things. And now basically everybody that would be integral to the success of Miami and them having a shot against these Lakers in the finals is hurt.
Yep.
We don't know if Dragic is out for the remainder of the series. However, I think at this point with a plantar fascia tear in his left foot, it would be a long shot for him to make it back. And Bam, they're calling it a neck strain on his left side. I thought it was a shoulder thing. However, he's listed as doubtful for tonight as well. And hey, guess what? So in the Eastern Conference Finals, just conveniently enough for myself, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero looked like the Super Mario Bros. And now they look like a bunch of Cabbage Patch Kids against this Lakers defense. So it's nice that they decided to not show up. So the Heat looked like a team that we have not seen for the last 2.5 months. I mean, they've been incredible this entire bubble, even predating the actual start of the postseason. So actually, in that case, a little spin zone, like that should actually give some sort of sense of optimism because of the fact that that team was so unrecognizable based on their play.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't hustle. They didn't have the 50-50 balls. They weren't winning those. They weren't playing the defense that they're accustomed to playing. And so, I mean, just the fact that you would think there's got to be a course correction just naturally because that's not them. They're going to play hard. They're going to compete. So maybe that's – if you're a Heat fan or have a betting or rooting interest in the Heat, maybe that's where you find yourself after Game 1.
It was brutal. I was pretty excited. I still had the Lakers winning in six. I just thought they were the better team. But I thought that the Heat would have made it really interesting. I still have the Heat winning one game. I think Spoelstra's a really good coach. I think they're prideful. I don't see them getting swept, but I also don't see them winning more than one game. Dragic did, like you said, had the torn plantar fascia, and one of my buddies, I don't remember who told me this, but I just looked it up again. Joe Johnson suffered the same injury during the 2013 playoffs, and he kept playing, which is really interesting. I guess he just took quarters.
They did say that he was able to put pressure on him for whatever that's worth.
Well, I've had plantar fasciitis before, which is, again, it's just that really thick band of ligament that connects like the front of your foot to your Achilles, essentially. And that's painful, and it's just like sore. So I can't imagine it just not being there. That was a big, because Dragic was playing really well, along with the rest of those Heat guys, with Hero playing really well, and then obviously you have the normal stars doing their thing. But it is really unfortunate. I was really excited to see a fun, you mentioned those storylines between Spoelstra and Pat Riley. And, I mean, I really like Spoelstra. I think that he alone wins them this one game with his strategy, how good of a coach he actually is. But I think the combination of Anthony Davis, excuse me, and LeBron James is just too much. Anthony Davis is at a super playoffs. I think he's averaging almost 30 points a game. It's like 27 or something. He's averaging a double-double. And so I think, and then LeBron is LeBron, and he comes alive during the NBA Finals specifically. He's playing in what, his 10th NBA Finals, which is just ridiculous. I just don't see it happening, unfortunately, for the Heat. I really don't. And I think, like you said, I think the NBA is sitting there like, well, this wasn't supposed to happen. Like, well, we didn't want this.
Well, and of course, I'm additionally salty, too, because I actually do think, not that Boston would have been able to get past Miami, but I do think Boston and their personnel and their talent would have posed more of a threat to L.A.
Yeah.
Of course, you have to get by Miami, which they were unable to do. But so I'm a little bit more frustrated, especially just watching everything that took place in Game 1. It was weird, too, because Miami got off to such a hot start.
They did.
I think they were up, like, 23-10.
Yeah.
And then the Lakers are like, oh, wait, we have Anthony Davis, and you have no solution for him, so we're just going to go to that. And the other thing is, like, the question the whole year with the Lakers has been the supporting cast, and who are you going to rely on? Who is going to be that third guy? A lot of people thought it was going to be Kyle Kuzma. He's yet to really step up and solidify his presence in the playoffs.
Yep.
But when, like, their shooting numbers weren't great from guys like KCP and Danny Green. However, it was the timing of the shots and the importance in the flow of the game.
Yep.
And they were hitting them. And it's like, okay, so when guys like that are firing after being completely dog crap for basically the entire postseason.
And Danny Green is that,
like,
guy.
You're done. You're done. You have no chance if these guys are hitting shots when they need to hit shots. It's just like, okay, whatever.
Wait, and you still have a guy like Rajon Rondo who's playing really well in his spot.
He chucked up a step back three, and it was the craziest thing to see, knowing Rondo's offensive limitations, but he'd been shooting well from three in the bubble, and then he did like a pump fake step back three. I think he only hit the backboard. It was just like, what are you doing, dude? It was
heat check. Heat check.
Yeah. Truly.
Yeah. And heck, they even started Dwight Howard for the game, which was really surprising. But I think he also just brings this energy to that team that, you know, he's just a very fiery guy.
It's fake energy. It's not real. It's not genuine.
Probably not.
It's fake. It's put on energy.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure is. But I think it works.
No, and they had to take him out because he was doing that against Denver, and Frank Vogel's like, hey, would you calm it the hell down? He's like, you're running around. You're getting out of position. You're getting stupid fouls. Yeah. Like, this is not the sort of
energy we're looking for.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation, I think, both for the NBA and obviously the Heat. But it's going to be a series that really, for me, I'll probably tune in tonight. Am I really going to be interested in it? Probably not, because of the fact that it's going to be the Lakers are going to win it.
Okay, two things, observations. One, for whatever reason, and this might just be my personal thing because I was rooting for the Celtics in the playoffs, but the conference finals, based on just having watched the first game of the finals, almost felt like there was a more heightened sense of intensity and consequence and stakes than what we've seen so far. That also could be because of the fact that Game 1 was a blowout. Second observation, I've had this thing the whole year. I feel like the value and the glamour and the brand of the Lakers has been watered down and devalued by LeBron's presence, because to me, it's basically, it seems like it's just LeBron's team. Similar feeling with Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, not as harsh, but I almost don't feel the Lakers coming through and showing through. Does that make sense to you
at
all? Do you feel that?
I do get that, because I feel like that would, it's almost like when Jordan left. Let's even use another example. When he bought the Hornets, it was the exact same kind of thing. Like, it wasn't the Charlotte Hornets. It was Michael Jordan's team, or when he became whatever position he became.
Yep.
And no, I do get that, because you have this lineage of his history for the Lakers, and you bring in a guy like LeBron James who has his own lineage and history that's completely separate of what the Lakers did. And it was weird. It feels like it's LeBron first, Lakers second. And to be fair, I think that also is LeBron himself. Like, I feel like it's LeBron first, team second.
100%.
And it's always been that way, and I think that's where it really solidifies itself, where you get LeBron first, team second. This is LeBron's Lakers, not the Lakers who have LeBron James on their team.
I think, too, it also doesn't help that they were coming off of, you know, several years where it was just a team of scrubs. You had the Byron Scott years before that. You had the Mike D'Antoni years, which kind of had, like, a good roster on paper, but just didn't end up being what they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And then you had Luke Walton last year and everything. But I don't know. That's just something that I've been thinking and has been occupying my mind as I've been watching the Lakers. It's just like, doesn't actually feel like the Lakers. I don't know, but that's
and maybe
it'll
change if they win, and then it'll be, you know, Lakers have won this many championships, and it'll be different. But it definitely does feel different, for sure. So we had some coaching change ups happening just yesterday, and it was very weird. You know, I hate the 76ers. I think they're a poorly ran franchise. I think Joel Embiid is a I don't know what the right word is. I think he's soft. I think
he's soft.
He's very soft, but he's also kind of a prima donna. Like, he's a guy who I would hate to coach. If I had to be like, if someone said, here's five NBA players, here's Joel Embiid and four other players, I'd be like, just, you said Embiid. Like, I would hate to coach him. I also would hate to coach Ben Simmons, and mainly because he's a tweener. I don't know if I could figure out where to play him. And I think it would frustrate the heck out of me because I wouldn't be like, hey, Ben Simmons, go run point guard for me. Hey, Ben Simmons, go be my power forward, because you can play both, but he's not great at either one of those.
So I'll push back a little bit on that, just because I think where you're coming from is just what we've seen in terms of the rosters that he's been on and the personnel that's been around him. I think if he were in a different situation with different rotations, I think it would be a little bit more clear cut as to how you would deploy him and his abilities.
Possibly, but he can't shoot.
I don't know. You've seen all those gym videos. Yeah, hitting threes, man.
Wide
open. I don't
open.
Know, man.
So, like, I don't know. I think the Sixers and Elton Brand need to look at themselves in the mirror, because Doc Rivers, I guess we didn't say that. Doc Rivers came in, hired to a 5-year contract after he was, I think he was fired from the Clippers. I think it said mutual, but I think it was he was fired from the Clippers.
He was fired. He was not expecting after the loss in the bubble. Especially, it was the timing of it that was bizarre, too, because it wasn't immediately in the aftermath of them leaving the bubble. It was, what has it been now? Like a week-ish, a week plus? He did not think that was going to happen. However, Steve Ballmer had a meltdown, and he actually had to cool himself down because he was ready to trade people. He was ready to – no, seriously, he was going to make roster moves and everything. He was irate being down there in the bubble from sources and watching – them blow that 3-1 lead to Denver, and within those games that they played, blow double-digit leads in those games, and just watching this team just completely implode and eat itself alive.
Well, I can see that, because he came in, he bought the Clippers, and he spent a ton of money to, like, make the Clippers back to at least
people
some
in executive
of
roles in the Clippers get paid by Ballmer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's a co-founder of Microsoft. He's like, how much do you want? Okay, yeah, here you go.
These guys are making dough.
And so I get that. I mean, if I was an owner of a professional sports franchise who is expected to compete for a national championship, for a title, I'd be livid. I'm surprised it took that long to fire Doc Rivers. Like, I wouldn't have traded anybody. They have the right nucleus, I think, and I don't really like Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. I don't remember what show I was listening to, but Kawhi Leonard isn't a leader. He doesn't have the voice to lead a team. That's why he was perfect in San Antonio, because he had Duncan and he had Tony Parker, and he could come in, or he could even be the three or the four, fourth best player, and he could just dominate. But now people are looking up like, Kawhi, what do we do? And he's like, I don't know.
He leads by example, and on Toronto that spiritual and emotional leader that they had was Kyle Lowry, and it just happened to work out perfectly between them being the best players on the team.
But I feel like at the same time, if you are getting a max contract and you're expected to be the guy, like, you got to have some sort of emotion, and he doesn't have it. Like, yeah, he's a great player, and he hustles, and he makes great defensive stops, and he makes big shots, but, like, he doesn't have any emotion.
It's worked for him.
The most emotion he's ever shown is when he just chuckled and he had that weird little laugh, and everyone's like, that Kawhi Leonard actually has a little bit of a personality, I think. But I think it's just tough. If the Clippers were in this position where they had to do something, and I don't think trading guys away was the right answer. I also, you know, Doc has struggled since he left the Celtics.
So in his 7 years with the Clippers, he only won 3 playoff series.
It was 7 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
He ran his course there. He's been there for a long time. I'm sick of the association. I don't want to I don't like the Sixers either. I'm not a fan. I kind of wish Doc would have taken a year off. It would have helped his stock, too.
Yeah.
If he went back into TV for a year, everyone would have been salivating at the mouth, being like, oh, my God, he's on TV now. We got to get him as a head coach. Because you still hear Jeff Van Gundy's goddamn name thrown around with coaching vacancies. It's like, hey, guess what? He's not coming out of the booth.
No.
But I hate everything about it on paper. I'm so tired of the Simmons and Embiid thing. I would love to see them go their own ways and have their own situations. I think that's the only way to salvage anything. We'll see if Doc can do anything with this roster. And they're hamstrung by their cap and their decisions to give Tobias Harris a max contract. Yeah. And again, I understand that you had to do it because you wanted to keep him, and that's how the market played out and everything. However, that is an oof of a move.
Yeah, that's not, he's not a third. He's not the guy who should be getting a contract like that. But I was reading on ESPN actually this morning, they were trying to compare his situations in Boston and LA to the same thing that's what he's experiencing in Philly, which is incorrect. He, in Boston, he had the big three of veterans, of team leaders, and Allen, Garnett, and Pierce, who were studs. And
functional role players like Eddie House and Tony Allen. Yeah,
yeah. And then you go to L.A., and he has absolute – and we'll look at the end here. Let's look at the beginning. He had Blake Griffin, DeAndre
– Jordan.
Jordan. Wow, I was going to say DeAndre Howard. I was like, that's not right. And, I mean, they were Lob City. Like, that was, like, their moniker.
And Chris Paul, and you had J.J. Redick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had a very strong team. And then you go to the 76ers, and you have the process, which this process has been going on for 5+ years.
That's the other thing I'm sick of, is this lingering residue that is the process. Like, Sam Hankey's long gone, and good riddance to him. I mean, I mean, he actually tried something, so good for him. But I'm just sick of everything. But, yeah, no, not exactly comparable situations. I would agree with you 100%.
So that kind of was frustrating to me. But I don't think it's going to work out well with the core players he has right now. I don't see them being any different. They're not going to be any better next year than they were this year, and probably they'll be worse.
Well, okay, and then if we look at it from the Clippers standpoint, if they don't already have a coach in mind that they were wanting, knowing that they were going to part ways with Doc, what the hell are you doing? Because, I mean, Doc is a competent head coach. Maybe he was there too long. Maybe, like I said, he had run his course, and it was time for a change regardless of the success or lack thereof. But who are you going after? Like, Ty Lue's been in parts of the conversation.
I think that's who I saw. I think that's, like, the top – I think that's their top choice because he's obviously –
But last offseason when he was trying to get a coaching gig, I'm wondering if it's going to be the same thing where he's asking for too much money because of the fact that he won a championship. But it's like, okay, you kind of had LeBron and Kyrie go off in the finals. I'm not sure how much you had to do with that. I'm sure you were able to manage personalities, and those are two personalities.
Yeah.
However, I'm not sure he garners that sort of money based on his resume.
Yeah.
With that being said, I just don't know who they're gunning after. We could wildly speculate if you want to. Booyah.
Nate McMillan.
Actually,
I don't know.
Do you want them to play hard? Do you want them to play defense? Then maybe hire Dave McMillan.
And you know, that wouldn't be the worst idea because they are obviously going to have offense. That's not going to be their issue. And they blew leads. That wouldn't be a bad choice. Hey, if you heard it here first, McMillan is going to the Clips.
One more thing I want to touch on that I think is interesting about the Clippers and the debacle that was the end of the season. So you have Steve Ballmer, who came in. And he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's got a lot of money, and he's looking to throw at places. So he throws at places. So he's getting people in the front office to tell him to make this trade, give up all 30 of your next first-round picks for Paul George. And then you have Doc. So you have the head coach, you have Steve Ballmer, and you have the front office all operating independently of each other. They have one of the highest-paid analytics teams, like the Sabermetrics teams, in the NBA. And what they were telling Doc, especially in this Denver series, Harrell is a DNP. You cannot put Harrell on the floor.
Yeah.
He refused to take him out. It's like, if you look at the numbers, it's staggering. He's just a defensive liability. Like, I mean, obviously, the whole idea was that he was the 1-2 punch off the bench with Lou Will. And yeah, he's going to get his numbers. He didn't really play particularly well in the bubble anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing to me the dysfunction and Doc being like, nah, he's one of the guys, just got to ride it out and just got to stick it out with him. It's like, dude,
you got to listen.
Don't turn a blind eye to that stuff. That stuff matters, and it's a glaring weakness, and you didn't do anything for it. So, Clippers.
That is, boom. Yeah, I think one big key for any organization, and you look, and I don't want to just be a homer and say the Seahawks, but you need cohesion from the top down, and the Seahawks have that, and they had it with Paul Allen because he was like, I'm going to be hands off. I just have money. Mm-hmm. I have money, and I can build whatever you want, and I can do whatever you want with your analytics, with your nutrition, like whatever. and you have a general manager and a head coach who are hired within the same week who became buddies and are just working perfectly. Like, they know what the other wants. They know what the other is going to do. And you look at some of the worst ran organizations, and it's all because of the fact that the GM slash owner slash coach can't get along. And I think the big part is you need to have a guy who likes Ballmer. Ballmer's a very interesting owner because he's, I wouldn't say he's hands on, but he is. Like, he has visions, he has mindsets, and he wants results. And so he'll put himself out there to get those results. But he's not going to be a guy who's going to, like, he's not going to be the GM. He's going to be like, I want this, though. Like, if he's like Paul George, if he wants something, he's going to say it. But he's not going to become the GM. And so, and he's crazy. Like, he's literally seems to be, like, insane. But I love that about him at the same time.
Yeah,
like,
that press conference after they landed Kawhi and PG last summer was something.
Was absolutely bonkers and awesome. So, bad move for the Sixers. I think the Clips need a guy who can work under Ballmer and who can make the – I mean, McMillan's a decent choice, I think, in terms of just the defense. But I think Lou's a safe choice because he's been there. We'll see what happens. It'll probably be like who was that head coach for the Sonics right after McMillan? He's still a head coach.
George Karl?
Not George Karl. The guy had facial hair. He's been on broadcast. I'm not going to remember his name, but I see him. I've seen him at GU games.
Oh, T-Pain. Really.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So we're gonna move on to some sports that I think are more exciting because they just started. They're coming into week four. The NFL is awesome. Injuries are unfortunate. We didn't really talk much actually last week about the fact that.
Yeah, we did.
About that, it was my fault.
Oh,
yeah, you bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was your fault, and I kept saying stop talking, and what do you know, Seattle.
Has a nice
potentially
long...
dodged a bullet because none of the injuries that occurred on Sunday were thought to be serious. However, guys are going to miss time, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
But yes, that was a fat stack of an injury report Wednesday through Friday.
Yeah, that very much was. And if we're looking at disappointments in the NFL season, the first one has to be injuries. There's a lot of guys who are missing time. Not even just season-ending injuries, but like Christian McCaffrey's out 4 to 6. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a disappointment, but that's something we can't really discuss because injuries are injuries. They're going to happen whether we try to not prevent, you know, try to prevent them or not. But look, we're going to go over some disappointments here in this young season, and I know we're only 3 games in, but there's some teams who just don't look good. One of those teams being the Falcons, and I love Dan Quinn. I love the Falcons. I think Matt Ryan is a good quarterback. They just don't have it, and it's really weird because 2 years ago they had an absolute beast defense. I mean, they had guys flying around the field. Dan Quinn had those guys ramped up, but then Matt Ryan had a down year, and like their offense wasn't very good. And now they're 0-3. They missed an onside kick. They've given up leads. They're like the first team in NFL history to give up, 15-plus point leads or something like that in back-to-back games. Not good. And I'm surprised Dan Quinn still has his job, and maybe it's because Arthur Blank really likes him, the owner of the Falcons. Something's happening because he should have been fired, unfortunately, probably last year. But I don't know.
Well, the thing is, like, last year the Falcons saved his job because they ended up ripping off like 6 straight wins and got it to 7-9.
It was right after the game that they completely messed everything up, and then they had like the team only meeting, and like they came out like, we love Dan Quinn.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what? Like, you guys suck. And then they ripped off 6 straight wins to go into a pretty promising 2020 season, and they have been terrible. And it's not the offense's fault. It's not the defense's fault. It's the team's fault. That team is falling apart, and I'm not sure why, because Dan Quinn seems like a cool guy to play for. And he seems like a decent coach because he always takes responsibility. He never puts blame on his players. He's like, the buck stops with me.
Okay, can we also talk about something else, though, that is not of consequence at all? But okay.
All right, I'm all
so,
for it.
So many, not so many. A few teams obviously had redesigns.
30 teams.
Had redesigns of their uniforms this offseason. Yeah. One of the more notable ones was Atlanta. So, through three weeks, you've worn the same damn pairing of uniforms every single time.
Have they actually?
Yeah, they've worn the black on black all 3 games. How well has it worked for you, Atlanta? Let's see some of the red. Let's see some of the white. Change it up. What are you doing?
You've worn all black all 3 games.
Stupid little thing that I got frustrated.
No, that is frustrating. What idiots?
What are you doing? I want to see something.
They not? Wow. That's. I don't know why, because their jerseys actually are. I actually do like the blacks, but.
I like the old-fashioned blacks, not exactly the new era.
Yeah, they're a little too much. But yeah, you got to change it up. If the Seahawks are losing, and I've been doing the same thing for each week, I'm switching it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm switching it up right then and there because, yeah, that is where that's a good point because that's probably their biggest problem actually is their jersey choice.
I know they're begging for it, man.
The other big problem, and they played last night, the Jets, but specifically Sam Darnold, he's regressed. He really has, and I feel bad for him. But he doesn't have a good team around him. He has bad wide receivers, but he still has regressed.
So what has he regressed from, though? That would seem to indicate that at one point he was progressing.
Fair enough.
He's just kind of the same. He's in a terrible situation so many times.
Yeah.
It's not actually the merit or the talent or, yeah, just the productivity of the player. It's where they get drafted. It's the situations that they get drafted into. We'll never know how good Josh Rosen could have been because he went to an awful Arizona Cardinals team that had an offensive line.
And then an awful Dolphins team.
and then Kyler Murray was the first pick in the draft being a Heisman winner. And they're like, hey, that's hot and sexy. Yeah. And it's worked out well.
Peace out, Rosen.
So it's so many times it's about situations. And I feel like Darnold can play. If anything, we saw on display last night, his mobility. He put a sick juke on a defensive back and was like, "What?"
Yeah,
as Chris Berman would do.
What, 34? Was it 35-yard touchdown?
Yeah, I don't know. And he was fast. He was outrunning D-backs.
That big boy can run, I guess.
No, and he was. I don't know.
He might need a change of scenery, and so ownership came out for the Jets today. I think and just clarified like Gase is our head coach. I think it was actually a rumor, but whatever. That Gase is our head coach throughout the year.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna circle back to this
and
later.
One of my, I think it was my buddy AJ, again, the Bears fan, said last night, why not keep Gase as the head coach throughout the year, go 0-16, and get Trevor Lawrence. And then fire Gase after the year.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I saw Greeny tweet this
morning. I also saw that.
I saw him tweet, if you are Trevor Lawrence and the Jets find themselves with the first pick, stay in college, stay at Clemson
another
year. This
happens every time there's a top quarterback. They said the same thing for Burrow. Like, Burrow, you better stay if the Bengals get the first pick. And they say it every single time there's a really high-end quarterback, and I think it's a terrible take because no guy is going to do that. No guy is going to stay in college because he doesn't want to play for an NFL team. I don't care how bad they are because you know what talks? Money talks, and they're going to want to go play NFL and go make $20 million a year being on a rookie contract, being the first overall pick. So that's a terrible take and weird. It's Greeny again. Terrible take, not surprised. He was the worst part of Mike and Mike.
I'm not going to comment on that.
So you agree?
No.
Yeah. He's just gotten worse in my opinion.
Also, it
I loved him
my
in the
heart
beginning.
That they actually don't have a relationship. That it was like strictly
brutal.
A working
it's
thing.
It's brutal. Yeah. I thought they were buddies.
Yeah. I know. That's tough to hear. Like the realities
of
it.
Yeah. That
was. Golic was on, like, pardon my take, like a month ago, and he was just talking about it after his retirement and everything, and he's like, yeah, no, we don't talk. We're cordial at functions, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, really, that was bad. So that's a good point. Darnold is still a disappointment, but he is in a bad situation.
Yeah, I don't think you can put it on his shoulders. He hasn't played well either, so, I mean, you can put that part on his shoulders. There's a lot of things going on, man. You got to factor in a lot, and there is certainly a lot of bad going on.
It sounds like Darnold's disappointment. That's a good point.
I love you, Sam.
I think it is what it is. So
rep
also,
the Redheads.
This one will be quick. Sort of the Texans, they're 0-3, but they have faced a brutal schedule, going from the Chiefs to the Steelers to the Ravens. I don't know if that was in order, but, that's a bad way to start the season. That is not a fun way to start the season. Deshaun Watson has had a decent year, not a Deshaun Watson quality year. So, we'll see if that changes this week. They have a better matchup.
I don't know because you have another team that's desperate in the Vikings. You don't want to play desperate teams ever.
No, you don't. The Seahawks play the Vikings next week, so hopefully the Vikings get some of their skill out this week and then just forget how to play football next week. A really bad one, which is not surprising because this has happened the last 2 years. The NFC East is an absolute straight dumpster fire. I mean, they are 2-9-1, and they're lucky to have tied that game.
I don't have the Sunday night football schedule in front of me going on for the rest of the season, but I can only imagine that there are those classic NFC East matchups just waiting for us.
Giants-Eagles, Sunday night football.
Yeah. Definition of mediocrity at best, and I can't wait to watch it all on Sunday night. But, yeah, is anybody surprised? This is a year-in, year-out, reoccurring theme that division.
And the NFC East has a little bit of pride. Like, they have some good history with the Giants, the Eagles, the Cowboys. I mean, they are literally just
I think they're the only division that every team has won a Super Bowl in.
Probably.
Now that the Eagles won it back in 2017, I think they're the only one. Don't spend too long thinking about it.
I can't think of one off the top. I mean, the NFC West isn't there. Wait. No, the NFC West has. No, they haven't.
One. With a W and an O.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it is unfortunate to see from their part, but I love it because I think the NFC East has the most ridiculous fans in the entire
league.
They
have the most ridiculous media coverage. I don't even care about the fans. I just hate the media coverage. Like, I hate the Eagles, and it's not really anything On the part of the Eagles, I just hate how much we talk about Carson Wentz. I hate how much we talk about Doug Peterson. I hate how much we talk about the talent on the roster. Stop.
Yeah.
They had 13 sick games in 2017, and then Nick Foles, the legend, came in relief, and what happened happened, and it was magical, and you guys suck.
They do
and
suck.
And you punted to tie the game. You could have kicked a 64-yarder. The Cincinnati Bengals. My God, get
that
it together.
That was bad. That was
get
really bad.
Get it together. Actually, you know, it might have been a smart thing knowing how bad this division is, knowing that a tie actually could get them into the playoffs going forward. But I'm not going to give them the credit of being cognizant of that in the moment.
Not especially not for Doug Peterson.
So can we please stop talking about this division? I'm pissed.
Yeah, let's move on. Vikings are a disappointment. They also have been terrible. Kirk Cousins Kirk Cousins has regressed. He hasn't done anything. And that's I don't fair. Know if that's like the lack of Stephon
Diggs. I know.
And
at the beginning of the season, I was like, I believe in Kirk Cousins.
I also
like,
believe in Kirk Cousins.
He's showed up.
He has showed up and he's making awful. Moves, and he's been terrible. Thielen has kind of disappeared, and I think he's getting a lot of attention. Justin Jefferson did have a really nice game for them this last week, so maybe that opens up the field a bit for them. But I don't know. Like, Dalvin Cook has looked good still. That's nice, but their defense has been terrible. Danielle Hunter still is hurt.
Ngakoue has not been acclimated
not
to whatever
all,
they
yeah.
have going on
and
there
and a little
defensively.
Bit, and, in, you know, thankfully, with the new 14-team playoff format, the Vikings are still in it at 0-3, because in the past at 0-3, that's a death sentence, especially in a division as tough as the NFC North should have been. But the Bears are 3-0, the Packers are 3-0, so Vikings have some room to make up, and I don't want to hit on this one too hard, but it is worth mentioning, and probably worth mentioning for another guy too. Both Brady and Breeze, specifically Breeze, have not looked themselves and they haven't been for the last couple years, but it really is coming to the surface now. Breeze just, I think Kamara has, he would be wide receiver 5. If Kamara was a wide receiver, he'd be wide receiver 5 in fantasy. And a lot of that is because Drew Brees isn't throwing the ball. I think his average depth of target is like 4.3 yards.
It's brutal.
It's really not good. So, and at least Brady has stretched the field a little bit. He does have guys who can stretch the field. Michael Thomas can't do that. I know he's not been hurt. Not been healthy. But Michael Thomas isn't a guy who runs go routes down the sideline. So I do still have faith in the Saints. I think they're a really good football team. I'm not just saying that because Vinny, our producer, is over here behind
our
the,
Saints fan correspondent.
He's
Vinny
literally
is
can,
in denial
I can see
as
him,
we speak.
I can see him out of the corner of my eye, like shaking his head, like, "Are you talking bad about Drew Brees?" And then I said, like, how good the Saints still are, and he's like over here, like, "Oh yeah, you bet they are." So they'll be fine. Drew Brees, though, this, and I know he's already said this, but this is his last year for sure. He can't do it anymore. He really can't. So, but they're still going to compete for a high end seed in the NFC playoffs. But moving on to more important things, I am back in the lead in the picks, 32-15 through 3 weeks.
Let's get it straight, though. This was my belated birthday present to you. Was me taking the whole notion of any given Sunday and every game is like a snowflake a little too close to heart and. I had an awful week. I win 7-9, and you win 10-6. So
7-9. Ouch.
Yeah, hats off for a solid effort.
That's not good. Now all you have to hope for is a 7-9 Seahawks team making the playoffs and, you know, beating the Saints is the kind of comeback you need.
Boy,
right now.
That was a stretch.
I'm just trying to, I mainly just wanted to go after the Saints a little bit. Again.
Yeah, no, I got that.
So that's
don't worry,
fair,
I have something pegged up coming here.
Oh, good.
Don't you worry, I got something in my
who
pocket.
Who are the Saints playing? Is it based off of who they're playing?
Nope.
Oh, okay, well, we'll see what happens. So, so we're going to go through picks here real quick. Like I said, I'm winning 32-15 to 30-17. Just want to make that clear.
You have a two-game lead going into week 4.
Massive two-game lead moving forward. We didn't pick yesterday's games, so we're not going to add those to the totals. I probably would have picked the Broncos anyway.
I have no idea who I would have picked. I would have picked a tie.
We should mention this, actually. Brett Rypien made his first NFL career start yesterday for the Broncos against the Jets. He went to Shadle Park, went to Boise State. His uncle, not his dad, which they mentioned multiple times in some of the things that I heard, his uncle is Mark Rypien, not his dad. So make that clear. He had an awesome game. He threw for 242 yards. He did have two really bad interceptions, but he had two touchdowns, some really good throws, like some absolute dimes.
Yeah.
His accuracy was on point on his good throws, but you could see the undrafted rookie come out when he threw some of these interceptions that he had. But great for him. Great for Spokane. That's awesome news. He won his first career start. Moving on to this week, we will start with the Colts at the Bears.
So this one, I'm going with the Colts just because I cannot for the life of me imagine a 4-0 sitting next to the Chicago Bears.
Yeah,
because they're frauds. Outside of that, I don't have a lot. I haven't been paying attention to the Colts because that it's just one of the least interesting teams in all of sports for me personally.
No, that's fair. Philip Rivers
kinda, makes me think things that I don't want to think about.
I'm going to go with the Bears again. I think that defense is going to continue to get better. They have to get better. The Colts just aren't doing it for me. Their defense also looks really good. I think Nick Foles is going to give them a little bit more life. Trubisky's just a bad player to watch. Like, he just makes some terrible, awful, horrendous decisions. He's more mobile, though, than Foles. I think that helps him. But I like Foles as a thrower better. So I'm going to go with the Bears. Then we got the Jags at the Bengals. Game of the week.
Yeah, the Jags let me down on Thursday night last week against Miami. Fitzpatrick got crazy
and
tapped into his lumberjack powers. But I'm going with the Jags.
Really?
Yeah. I love it. I love them.
I do, too. I'm going to go with the Bengals on that one. So that, there's the big swing there. We'll see what happens with those two. I like Burrow. I think he's playing pretty well. He's getting destroyed back there. He needs some help.
Dude, bad.
He took some shots last week. Like, some really bad shots. Not just like, ow, like, that must have hurt. Like, that guy could, like, his season could be
okay,
over.
Also, Brett took some shots last night. Did you see Vic Fangio rush the team off the field so they wouldn't shake hands with Adam Gase?
Yeah,
was that
was
because of
happy.
All the personal fouls to the
quarterback? I think he was specifically unhappy with the way that the defense was playing in general because they had, like, I think seven personal fouls
yesterday. That's what I thought,
And that one guy had two. The guy who at the end.
I actually kind of respected Vic. I was, like, watching it in real time. Yeah, I was like, wait, what's happening? Oh, my God.
And, like, Gase called a timeout there toward the end of the game with, like, 30 seconds left.
Even like, my parents were like, what is happening? And I was like, I can't explain this to you right now.
That was bad, and I don't blame him at all. Greg Williams continues to show his ugly colors, and I don't know why he keeps getting jobs because he really shows NFL in a bad light. For people who want to see good football, that's not the kind of football you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really bad.
Sorry, I just had to bring that up because
that was fair. That was bad, especially on a local kid, undrafted rookie. Like, dude, he put together a good game against you. Like, just accept it.
Nobody cares that he's local except for locals.
Exactly. Then we have the Browns at the Cowboys.
I had a hard time because I'm not bullish on the Cowboys right now. I think they have appeared to be the same old Cowboys, maybe just with a little bit more offensive. More of an offensive leash,
That's for sure.
But I'm going with the Cowboys. So there you
I
go.
Also am going with the Cowboys. The Browns have found their formula for success, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, last week, if Dwayne Haskins wasn't absolutely abysmal,
that's also a big story.
The Washington football team is in that game, and that may have played out very differently. So I don't know.
I agree. I also picked the Cowboys. Then we have the Saints at the Lions.
Saints.
I'm also going to go with the Saints. Michael Thomas is back. Stafford is still a little streaky, and he does have Galladay healthy again. Galladay got a touchdown last week, so that will definitely help. But the Saints have looked good overall. Their offense is still humming, even though Breeze can't really – I should say last week their offense came alive. But Michael Thomas will help, and that offense I think will get back on track. So okay. I also pick the Saints. Then we have the Chargers at the Bucks.
Bucks just because of their defense.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they'll make her. I actually have the Bucs defense again this week.
I know.
Fantasy.
It's great, actually.
I think pretty cool. It's Herbert is still a rookie. He still makes plays, but I also have the Bucs. Then we have the Ravens at the Washington football team. I have the Ravens.
I have the Ravens, too. They got to bounce back after just put in their place.
Real quick, Lamar Jackson, and I know people really want to make him out to be like this up-and-coming star. You can't throw for under 100 yards. You can't do that at all. I mean, and I don't want to bring this back to Russell Wilson, but when you want to, he's the top quarterback in the league right now. I don't care what anybody says. He has never had a game where he threw for under 100 yards, ever. And Lamar Jackson did that against an average Kansas City defense and a below average secondary. So that was terrible. But yeah, they do need a bounce back game. I still am picking the Redskins. We have Arizona at the Panthers.
I really wanted to go with Carolina on this one for no good reason other than rooting against the Cardinals. No, I have to have a little bit more of a rational week this week after what I did.
You sure?
Yeah, right, not entirely, but
I would appreciate it.
I'm going to opt into my rationale this week. So I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
I also am going with the Cardinals. Carolina's boring. Teddy Bridgewater is Drew Brees version 2 with less skill. He too also only, I think he has under 5 yards an attempt, and that's not going to win you very many football games. Especially with not having Christian McCaffrey there to catch it. Mike Davis is much...
Teddy Bridgewater is basically just like a less mobile to Rod Taylor.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to make mistakes. He's also not going to be very exciting to watch, and he's not going to make winning plays. So,
yeah,
there you go.
The Panthers just aren't a great team, especially without McCaffrey. This is going to be a fun one. Vikings at the Texans.
Oh, battle of 0-3s. And two teams that we would not think that would be 0-3.
Not at all.
I mean, I guess if you look at, Houston's schedule maybe would give you a second thought about that. But I'm actually going to go with the Vikings just because they actually showed something last week and easily, had they not botched it, could have beat the Titans.
They could have.
However, they did not.
I'm gonna be different. I'm gonna go with the Texans mainly because I have Deshaun Watson on my fantasy team. I'm hoping for a nice week from him.
Okay.
And I think that the Minnesota defense is a good time to do it. They haven't figured out their pass rush like we mentioned. And I think Deshaun Watson is due for a Deshaun Watson game. I mean, he's only running for like 10 yards a game, which is averages almost 30 over his career, so I think that's been surprising. I'm going to go with the Texans on that one. Then we have the Giants at the Rams.
Not going to pick the Giants in two consecutive weeks. Give me the Rams.
Good call. I'm also going to pick the Rams. They're better. Then we have the Patriots at the Chiefs, which should actually be a bit more decent game than I expected at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, give me the Chiefs. If this game were happening later in the season, if this were like a November or December game, I think the Patriots would have their offense a little bit more tuned. They would have a little bit better of an idea of what they were doing week in and week out, not like running these end arounds with like undrafted rookie receivers and stuff like that. But anyway, hopefully it'll still be a good game, but give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, I also have the Chiefs. I think Cam Newton, he's not as good as he's looked. I think the Seahawks made him look better than he actually is. So I also am going to pick the Chiefs. Then we have the Bills at the Raiders.
Circle the wagons. Give me the Bills.
I also have the Bills. Raiders have looked better this year overall. I think Derek Carr is
they're kind a competent of, team.
Yeah, they're competent. They're going to be competitive.
They're going to be like 9-7.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. And I think they'd be happy with that, really. It's first year in Vegas. So
yeah.
Then to finish out Sunday, we have the Eagles at the 49ers.
Yeah. Man, I hate this so much. I wrote down Eagles, and I just can't do it after everything that I've been saying over the past few weeks about them. So I'm going to audible, hot route, on the fly, 49ers.
That is a tough one because I would like to think the Eagles are going to are going to figure it out. I think Doug Peterson is a good offensive mind, but they just haven't, and I would really love to pick the Eagles. I really, really, really would, but I'm going to have to pick the Niners too, unfortunately. Okay. I think it should be a good game. I'd love it if the Eagles won. I'd absolutely love it, and I would be fine with losing that game, but I think the Niners are probably going to do it. Eventually, the Niners are going to start losing football games. They really will. I'm sure of it. And then our Monday night matchup is the Falcons at the Packers.
Packers are going to annihilate them.
I think it's going to be a shootout, but I think it's going to be like a 47-32 game.
All right.
Something like that. Like a nice over-under of 70.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I also am going to pick the Packers. Moving on to the Seahawks pick here, we have the Seahawks at the Dolphins, and I'm going to pick the Seahawks. They're a better team. I think the secondary, even without Jamal Adams, is the defense is going to have to shore it up. Bobby Wagner in his post-game press conference sounded very dejected, like they had just lost a big-time game. And
good, he should be.
Oh no, he didn't. And it's awesome. I'm really happy to see that. And hopefully they can get that stuff figured out. And I don't know if it's play calling. I don't know if it's pass rush or what. But we'll talk about that in a second. I do have the Seahawks over the Dolphins this weekend still.
I have the Seahawks. I think this is a textbook definition of what the scholars would coin a trap game. I do think it has that potential. There's
especially
something weird about playing
Miami.
There in Miami. 2012 was the last time that Seattle was down there. And that was a bizarre game. The game was put on hold because the sprinklers came on at halftime or in the third quarter or something like that. Just kind of a bizarre play. You never want to play in Miami. Like,
it's a bad place. Miami's a bad place.
Right, yeah.
Speaking of Cleveland being a bad place, Miami's a bad place.
I don't think Philadelphia has received enough hate from this particular podcast, actually. I think we've been skipping over some of the cities that probably...
Who need some hate?
Yeah.
They're the city of brotherly love, though.
Clearly,
behind that moniker a lot. And then they also worship a fictional character, but it's fine.
It's a pretty sick fictional character.
It's a sweet fictional character, but, like, he literally is like a god. Like, he has a statue. like in the middle of like their big, like, I don't know where it's at, but I would imagine it's like the town square.
But anyway, I will also pick the Seahawks. And again, for 4 weeks in a row, I hate myself for picking Seattle. However, they have given me at least some sort of reason to pick them. So I'm going to do it again.
All right. So we're going to break down the Seahawks a little bit up until this point. We're going to start off. I want to go offense, defense, special teams, but I'm going to go in reverse. I'm going to start with special teams, mainly because it's the easiest one to talk about. Their special teams has been killer. Jason Myers hasn't missed a kick yet. Michael Dixon is back to his 2018 form.
Thank
Pro
God,
because
it was so depressing watching him punt the ball last year.
I don't know what the problem was last year. You're a punter. I can see kicking. I can see a kicker having a down year. But, like, punting, dude, like, what's different? Like, there's literally nothing different. But, I mean, he's had some really killer punts, especially in the Cowboys game. So he's back to being awesome.
Their punt coverage has been great,
He's been really good, too, yeah. They have a couple, and they've been switching guys out. DJ Dallas had his first snaps last week on special teams, wearing 31, which was really weird to see. But that's really cool. Special teams have been solid. That doesn't have to even be looked at. And that's also with their coordinator still being gone. Mm-hmm. Brian Schneider's still MIA. I think he had some family stuff going on, but that's still with their assistant special teams coordinator stepping up to the plate. So that's really nice to see. Let's go to their offense next, which I really don't want to spend too much time on the offense because the offense has looked really good. The play calling has been sick. I think Schottenheimer moving. And I talked to my buddy.
You didn't like the move because of the optics of it, which is fair, and I understand. That's not what you want a football guy doing is being up in the booth. However, look at these 3 weeks of Seahawks offense.
But the results have been
awesome.
The results, and I don't know if it's he's seeing things better or what.
It has to be.
I would, because he did kind of mention that, like he's able to see how the coverages are reacting to some of these play calls.
Well, he's seeing some of the tendencies of the corners and the secondaries, especially.
Which has been big. And so I'm all for it. I would have the entire coaching staff in the booth if it meant the Seahawks win the Super Bowl. And I would complain about it from the first day to the day after the Super Bowl. Yeah. But that has been really awesome. The offense is really killing it. The running game has been a little soft. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're just not playing that sort of game right now. I think I do like the 1-2 punch of Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde. I think Hyde has been – I mean, he ran for 1,200 yards last year and 9 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And he was a veteran we pulled off the street, and what a good veteran to get.
And he had some interesting comments this week about understanding now why he lost to Seattle with basically every team he played. I think he was specifically citing San Francisco, where he spent the majority of his career, but he understands the culture and now being a part of it, and just the mentality and the expectation of winning and how that's not a through line with all the teams in the NFL.
Which is really cool to see.
Okay, so I'm about to say something. I don't think it's a hot take, but the numbers might disagree. Mm-hmm. I trust you. I respect you.
That's fine.
I feel like you're going to push back on this.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready for it.
Russell was off. Russell was so off on Sunday.
He was off on his short throws mainly. His short and intermediate throws were off.
Okay, no, even – okay, Vinny, prepare yourself. Even his touchdown to DK in the fourth quarter, that was the – it looked
it was
like
a little floppy.
It looked like
floppy.
Drew Brees threw that pass. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was the ugliest thing. There's your shot, Vinny. It was, I was, like, watching it in the air. I was like, this is going to – there's going to be a deep back that, like, runs under this, right? And it's, like, end over end, basically. Had no spiral on it. He was missing guys all over the place, though. It was really bad.
It was
and
the
on,
worst game for
and
sure.
And on third downs, too. And he was – like, that 2-point conversion, he made it way more difficult than it needed to be of a catch for Hollister. He had to jump, stretch out, and actually use his hands instead of just putting it in his chest. He was – and then, of course, he – has all the numbers and all the touchdowns and the passing yards and everything. So
14.
You look at the box score and you look at the box score and it's like, oh yeah, no, he was awesome. And he was the NFC Offensive Player of the Month, which he should have been. But I just want to objectively assess and say he was off.
He was off a little bit. I'll give you a couple throws. Because even the touchdown pass that was a little wobbly.
It feels like a lot, though, because we're accustomed to such a standard of greatness.
It does, but he has some games where he just will miss a couple throws. And you're right. He had a couple specifically low passes. He almost felt like he was short-arming some of these throws, and he was missing guys short. I think the touchdown pass to DK was fine. It wasn't a pretty throw, but it was on the money still.
Yeah, if DK's had two of those catches, he had the other one against Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah,
where it's like he's got the arm.
That
of the
one
defender.
Was a little short too. That one was a little short, and his guys are making plays for him. I will admit that. But it's not uncommon for his guys to make these plays. And even Carroll was asked about it in the post game presser. Like, your guys are making plays for you. Like he's throwing it up and he's making good plays. And I mean, it's true. The wide receivers are making good plays, but Wilson being off, and you're right. I think he was completing over 80% of his passes before this game, and I think now that was like high 60s, I think, I want to say, in this game, which is still really good. So I think him being off is still great quality.
It's still
it's not
get it
superstar
yes.
quality,
yes.
but it's still great quality. And I'd agree, and I'll push you back a little bit on like the touchdown pass, and he's still making throws that only Rodgers and Mahomes can make.
Yeah.
And that, real quick, that's one thing that bothers the absolute heck out of me. I hate watching Packer games or highlights of Packer games or Chiefs games because they're like, that's only a throw that Aaron Rodgers can make. And it's like, I saw Wilson do that an hour ago. Mm-hmm. That's only a play that the great Pat Mahomes can make. Yeah. And it's like, I saw Russell Wilson do that last week. So that's one thing that really frustrates me is Wilson still, to this day, is not getting enough love. Because he's been the best quarterback in the NFL, and it's objectively, it's close, but it's not that close. He is one, and like I would put Mahomes at like three. I don't think there's a two right now. That's how good Wilson's playing. Because Mahomes looked bad last week. Not week three, but week two. He didn't look that good.
Can I be honest, since I'm usually not?
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about the national recognition. I could not care less. It doesn't mean anything to me. If anything, worst case scenario, he is a top three quarterback. That's
fair.
Is the only argument that I will actually have with somebody if they were to say that he's not within the top three. But I just don't care. Who cares? I don't care if he wins the MVP. If you look at the history, people don't win MVPs and then win Super Bowls. So what do we really want here? Do we want another Seahawks MVP? Hey, guess what? Sean Alexander.
We should have won that. We should have won that.
I actually got into a Twitter beef with a Steelers fan who was less than coherent, but anyway.
Classic. That's what Twitter's for.
Yeah.
And that's fair, and I get that. I think it's just – and we talked about the whole New York coverage, Philly coverage. I think it's just that. I think every team in the Pacific Northwest, you look at the Mariners, and they haven't been good. I get that. You look at the Mariners, the Seahawks, and even the Blazers. The Blazers don't get the kind of love that they deserve in the – national landscape. So I think that's my biggest thing. Let's move on to the actual issues, and that's the defense. I actually had a very drawn-out discussion with my buddy Tim. He's not a Seahawks fan. He roots for them, but he's a Coug fan. He's a college football guy through and through.
Gross.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. I can't watch college football consistently. But he's literally like head over heels over the Cougs, and that's awesome. But we had this pretty long discussion in this group message with me and my buddies, and he and I were just going back and forth about the Seahawks defense, and he was talking about the Seahawks have a bottom three secondary, and I said no. And let me tell you why. The Seahawks defense is statistically last in the league in passing. They are 32nd in the league, and I get that. But the Seahawks do not have bottom three secondary talent. They have Quinton Dunbar, who's Pro Football Focus's top-ranked corner, still learning the Seattle. Isn't that crazy?
What?
Yeah, Quinton Dunbar was the top-rated corner by Pro Football Focus last year.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Oh, last year. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were talking about after his
two games.
Yeah.
No. So, and then you have Jamal Adams, who is arguably the best defensive player in the league, which people have said, I don't see best defensive player in the league. I see best maybe defensive back. Then you have Shaq Griffin, who had a very good rebound season last year, who's been a little shaky. Then you have Quandre.
He has been awful.
He has been really bad. This is part of the discussion that I had. He has been in good positioning. Now, the problem that the Seahawks corners have had since Richard Sherman left this team is they don't look for the ball. That's the biggest problem, because on that touchdown pass, on that deep crosser, he was on his guy. Do you want to know what the difference between a touchdown and an incomplete pass is? This, looking up and that.
Yeah,
literally, that's all he needed. I mean, that ball was right there.
I know.
And so his coverage has been fine. It's been the fact that he's not a ball hawk. That's the biggest problem with the Seahawks secondary right now.
So I think the bigger gripe that I've noticed with him, and your point is correct that you just made, he doesn't tackle, or he hasn't been tackling. And there was a play, I think it was a crosser to CeeDee Lamb. I could be wrong or mistaken, but it's like he didn't even, when he went to turn up field, he didn't even lunge to like trip him up at his ankles or anything. And I was like, dude, you were right there. I don't know. His tackling has been horrific.
Which is weird, because he's been
I know.
A very good tackler. He's still making good plays in the running game, which is really, again, weird that he's not diving at those wide receivers. But
our best defensive back has been Ugo Amadi. so far
oh,
this year.
Oh, I love – give me more Ugo
Amadi.
And give
I hated him
more,
last year because he got torched so many times in that Packers game.
He's been
game.
An absolute stud.
I know,
this
he
year.
Has been.
And I love to see it because that was a big weakness when Blair went down. I was like, oh, God, like yeah. he's just going to get shredded. But he had multiple plays last week where I was like, yeah, like you said, he is the best defensive back on the – he's
also,
might
shout
be the
out
best
Ryan
defensive
Neal.
player.
Ryan yeah. Neal, our yeah, Lord
nice
and Savior.
Practice squad guy with some dreads running around back there. First time we've had dreads in the secondary since Earl Thomas was running around back in 2010, I think.
Wow, maybe.
I think so. I think that, yeah, I mean, that's all I can think. So I, awesome to see that. Their linebacking corps is having no problems. Their defensive line, run-stopping-wise, has had no problems. They need a pass rush, and I don't know if they need to go out and get somebody. Maybe they're waiting. I did see an interesting report, or someone brought up this good point, that they might be waiting until, like, week 8, week 9, when some of these contenders are, like, or not contenders, sorry, are not playing well, and they're like,
looking to shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then might as well toss a second, third round draft pick out for a guy who's going to give you some good pressure. Because they're going to win. They're going to win ball games with this offense right now.
Yeah, I actually thought Shaquem played very well. And Carroll came
especially
out this
end,
week
yeah.
and said that he earned playing time and will be playing in that game in Miami.
You got to hand it to him.
I love him. It was great to see him back out on the field again. He was making plays. He didn't get any sacks, but he had a couple nice tackles out in the open. And God damn it. And we're canceled.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see him. He put pressure on Dak. Again, he didn't get any sacks. Are we done talking about the Seahawks?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so. We'll real quick, just mainly – their biggest thing they got to figure out is that defense. That offense is looking good. Special teams is looking good.
It's just so weird because the first time since 2011, 12, I feel more at ease with the offense on the field. Because it used to be the opposite. I was like, if the defense is on the field, I was like, it's more likely that they're going to make a negative play or a tackle for a loss than it's likely that their offense is going to actually make any sort of play.
In the Pete Carroll era, we'll end with this. The Pete Carroll era, the Seahawks have given up 400-plus yards passing, I think, 13, 14 times now.
And their record
and they're
is?
Undefeated. They're undefeated in those games. And I think that goes I think the Seahawks of old, a lot of that was because it was garbage time. And we've had a little bit of garbage time this year, but a lot of it's been, you know, they're just not playing great on the back end. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But let's get into actually more Seahawks news. But this is my jabroni of the week. It was bad. This was a really bad, bad play that happened. And it actually kind of hurt my stomach because I was like, God, you don't want to see that on a football field at all. So this was Tristan Hill, who's a second-year guy out of University of Central Florida. Here's the play. Carson takes up the middle. You know, one-yard gain here, two-yard gain. And now I thought it was 99 coming through. A lot of, and he fell on his leg. But in reality, we'll watch a different clip here. You'll see what he does. I mean, good tackle there. Grab him by the ankles. A little twist right there. That's fine. You know, make sure he's down. But watch him here. That's Carson's foot, by the way, that is completely twisted in a way that you should never see. That was bad. That
was really bad.
Ugly.
I
was
pissed.
Dirty.
I was honestly irate.
And once I saw that, I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like that. And I'm not. And like you said, we're not the only ones. There's a lot of NFL players who came out, not just on the Seahawks, but former players who said there is no room for this in our game. And we were talking about this before the show. There has not been one fine or one suspension. And we're on Friday. We're 5 days after this happened, and the NFL hasn't said one word about it. But Quandre Diggs gets tossed for making a football play in week 2. Now, that was still a bad hit going helmet to helmet. But the fact that this guy intentionally was trying to hurt a player, and there hasn't been one word from the NFL about it. And that's one of the big problems that I have, because the helmet-to-helmet stuff is cool and all. Like, you know, let's stop head injuries.
It's cool and all, yeah.
Like, let's stop. Like, let's not do that. But those are football plays. 90% of the time, those are football plays. This wasn't. And this has no place in the NFL. This has no place in sports. And if the NFL doesn't do anything about it by the time that this game happens, the games happen on Sunday, it's going to be bad news. And hopefully there's someone out there who has more clout than I do who makes a big deal about it.
There will be.
And there better be. So, and he did another play. Vinny, do we have that other video? He did another play. This was on the last drive.
Here's the play that happened on Tristan Hill.
I know Wilson's short, but, like, again, I mean, he
DK Metcalf. Here's the play that just happened on Tristan Hill.
He literally goes face mask to face mask right on Wilson. And so he played. Then this guy
was auditioning for this week's Thursday night football game, actually.
Yeah, he's auditioning for Grey Glims. He really wants to be a Jet. He's a big Jet guy.
Especially with the spelling of the name, T-R-Y-S-T-E-N. Like, yeah, I know you had no part in that,
but your name is ugly.
You're a jabroni. We're going to use it
against you. You're a jabroni for your play and your name. Like, hopefully you got made fun of a lot back in high school and middle school. And he played with Shaquem Griffin, University of Central Florida, and missed Shaquille Griffin by a year. So they know each other a little bit. So I'd be curious to hear what they had to say, because that UCF football team was really close with how successful they went those few years. So yeah, that was my little soapbox moment. That actually made me really upset. But what do you got for us?
We're gonna take it back to the hardwood, to the NBA Finals, to tell you what my jabroni of the week is. So the NBA Finals through one game has not exactly felt like the finals. So what you see on the top, that first picture, is what a classic finals courts of the past have looked like. You got the Larry O'Brien in the middle, and then you have that classic cursive font that reads the finals.
Yep.
And the red and the blue are still the same on the baseline. However, wouldn't it make sense to maybe do like purple and red, Miami, or yellow and red? I don't know, actually make it correlate to the teams. I guess you don't want to do that, because technically there's supposed to be a home and away games. Yeah. But anyway, this is what we possibly could have And it's really that easy. And instead, what we have is at the bottom here, what in the hell I don't know. It almost looks like Navy Federal Credit Union, like, commercial, like, logo that comes on at the end. I don't know. It's terrible.
Yeah, whoever's...
It's really bad.
Whoever's in their marketing or design or whatever, like, they need to leave.
And how can you not take into consideration that, like, we're already working uphill here against the fact that we're in a bubble and there aren't fans, and that's what you come out with?
It's clunky.
Like, if anything, you could spruce up the court even more to actually try to get some sort of visual representation that, hey, this is the finals.
Well, I'm wondering if they wanted, because I saw there that it's YouTube TV right below that, so I'm wondering if they wanted it to match, like, the font of YouTube TV, but, like...
Bad decision.
Terrible decision.
Bad decision. You should have consulted us. I don't know why you didn't.
I was expecting a phone call from Silver.
We still haven't been called by the 49ers. I thought I was going to be in the defensive rotation this week.
Why do we even do this if we aren't going to get calls from these organizations?
Because I don't know.
I'm really expecting to make a big difference in the sports world in terms of making personnel decisions.
And we it for Lucky Bird.
We do it for Lucky Bird. Fly like an eagle and use Lucky Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad. That's really bad. Blocky, clunky, and you'd think in the year of 2020.
It looks like a
2K
court.
It looks like a practice 2K court. Yeah. Like, it looks like the court you go to for the combine as your Mike career player. Is like, that's like the top of what it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good at all. All right, what's your closing time?
So we've kind of touched on it a lot already. Typically, I don't really care when organizations are dumpster fires, regardless of what league, whether it's the NBA, the MLB, the NFL. Usually I'm just like, hey, that's kind of fun and entertaining, and it makes me appreciate the fandoms that I have and the contrast in what success and functionality and competence look like.
Yep.
However, I'm so done with this Adam Gase thing in New York. It is inexcusable that they brought him back for this 2020 season. It's indefensible. There was no reason to do it. And you have what just happened last night in Vic Fangio. I mean, nobody respects this guy. He's been riding on the coattails of a couple Peyton Manning seasons back in Denver for far too long. Why would you hire him?
That's a fair point.
And you know you're going to have a high draft pick, and you want to get this guy, this new quarterback, face of the franchise, and you get Darnold. Why would you? What success did Adam Gase have in Miami that would lead you to believe that he was going to be able to do anything within a lot of position groups less talent in New York? I don't know what to say. It's awful. And the fact that we're here Friday morning after the game and he still hasn't been fired is like, what are you doing? And you have Joe Douglas there, who is, by most accounts, very respected within the league as a GM. And it's just like, I am at a loss for words at this point in regards to the whole debacle that is the New York Jets. And of course, it's probably because we're used to suboptimal football and just work from the New York Jets. They had those fun years with Mark Sanchez and Rex Ryan.
Back.
And yeah, no, it was awesome. And that defense was so cool. And like, they've had talented guys on the defense. They're always drafting within the first 10 picks, and they've hit on a lot of those picks. Those picks have ended up moving on from the team. Yeah,
they usually hit somewhere else too.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if he's getting more of a pass just because we expect very little from the Jets. But it's like they're man, it's awful, and I'm so sick of it, and I can't stand to watch or hear about any of it anymore.
I have two thoughts on that. First, well, Peyton Manning wasn't good before he got to the Broncos, obviously. So, I mean, he's the reason why Peyton Manning's had such a good career, obviously.
Not a great playoff quarterback.
No, that is true. But, you know, yeah, that is a good point. The other thing is it almost feels like you are on the outside looking in of a bad relationship between Gase and the Jets. And, like, you so badly want to be like, hey, Jets, wake up. Adam Gase is not doing it for you. Like, he's not a bad-looking guy. Like, he might not be the worst coach, but, like, he's not right for you, man. Jets, like, come on.
He's not right for anybody. I don't want to see him in the league ever again. This guy sucks.
And you want him out.
Dude, I hate him. Not even, what is a redeeming quality that he has?
He has big eyes.
He was rolling Molly when he accepted the job in that press conference. Yeah, your coach is doing drugs to get through these press conferences. That's how
that's
bad he is,
because
he knows that he cannot stand on the merit of his work because there is none. Crazy. Crazy how that works.
I think he deserves a job somewhere. I think you're being a little harsh.
Probably, but I'm pissed. I'm so sick of it.
You big Jets guy?
I'm so damn sick of it.
You're sad for the fans of New York and all that.
I think it's cool when the Jets are good. I enjoyed those 2009 and 2010 Jet teams. I thought it was good for the league that the Jets had a little bit of relevance, especially because they rode the coattails of their defense, which is what you would expect.
Is it more the Jets being good or the fact that it was Rex Ryan being in charge of it? Because I think Rex Ryan is the reason why the Jets were so exciting.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
I think Rex Ryan makes the league more fun.
Nobody cared when he was in Buffalo.
I think they did a little bit.
They did. Nobody else did.
I think Rex is fun. Rexy. That's a Rexy. Good old Rexy.
Anyway, what's your closing time?
Mine's pretty interesting. This just came like randomly across my Facebook feed. Alexi Lawless, who's an American soccer stud. He's not that good, but it's American soccer, so he's a stud. But he came out against the current format of penalty kicks. And the current format is boring from the spot. It's a place kick, and you're 1v1 with a goalie, and you get 6 attempts, and whoever makes more of them wins. And he came out for the old way of doing it. I didn't even know there was an old way of doing it. And I'm thrilled about it because I found this video of what it used to be like. This is awesome. This is absolute.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just beautiful. Look how much more fun this is. I mean, you literally are going through. I saw this other video where they actually drew a PK because the goalie completely took out the player. But, like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And, like, that takes more skill on both the goalie. That actually gives the goalie a better shot in all things. But it also makes the strikers. I mean, how awesome would it be? Because occasionally what happens is if it goes all the way through the list of players, everyone gets a kick. And you go to sudden death, how awesome would it be to see a goalie running up on a goalie and, like, trying to score 1v1? I can't even quantify how much better this is than what it is currently now.
Yep.
And so I hope that MLS looks into it, and I hope the world looks into this, because I don't know if this used to be worldwide, but this should be done in all leagues across the world. It should be done in the World Cup. Should be done everywhere where a soccer ball gets kicked into a net. If there's a tie game after added time, this needs to be the way to do it.
And when this is widely implemented across the world, we will be accepting royalty payments for this suggestion.
For the amount of viewers that the MLS and the World Soccer FIFA get and also, let's look at this in FIFA terms. How awesome would this be in FIFA?
Yeah.
Like, to play, instead of just doing normal PKs, which are getting worse every year for whatever reason, that would be the best. And I'd be much better at it. But that would be the best thing. So, yeah, hopefully the FIFA organization, as well as the rest of my mom's calling. But we're almost done here, so she'll get a call back. Don't worry. So hopefully the rest of the world does this. But that's my closing time. It's been a great show. We've talked a lot of NFL.
We've talked for like 3 hours, so thank you for sticking around. But I think we did have a lot of good stuff here today,
a lot of good fun stuff. We're going to be back next week, most likely on our normal Thursday slot. We'll see. But we're going to be live. We're going to be live next week. I guarantee it. We were almost going to do it today, but our producer, you know, it's Vinny.
Said the read guarantee. Yeah.
But no, Vinny's going to get it all set up for us. Next week we'll be live. We'll also be taking calls, and we'll share it on our own personal Facebooks, and we'll take comments, anything that comes through. So keep an eye next week. We'll also give you a day notice too, before we go live to get you all ready for it. But again, thanks for stopping by. This is The Locker Room. I am Justin Reed alongside Andrew Tenney, and we will see you live next week here on The Locker Room.
Thanks for watching The Locker Room on Spokane Talks. Check us out on Facebook as well as our other platforms. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by emailing us at info@SpokaneTalksOnline.com. And for more sports news, opinions, and content, follow Justin and me on Twitter.